I've been thinking recently about my past self, and often I remember things that I did when I was younger, and I get a little bit embarrassed because, well, I wasn't as wise as I am now. Now, if it was a movie that we were in, often the change from being incompetent to being good at something is usually done by a training montage. That's when you have the sports movie or the army movie or whatever it is that they're doing. They all start off quite bad at things. They can't shoot an arrow to fight the Hun in Mulan. They can't do... Rocky can't catch a chicken. That's one of the things he does. There's lots of things that they're bad at. But then you put a catchy tune on and then you see them slowly get better and better and better at it. And then when the montage is over, they are amazing at whatever it is. They can catch a chicken, they can shoot an arrow, they can run across the logs. They always seem to run across logs. I don't know why that seems to be such a big skill in things. But in reality, the process of growth is much harder. It's nice and easy to put on a cool tune and then see people go from being terrible at something to being great at something in the course of a song. But in real life, you have to face the pain of whatever it is that you've done, realize that you were wrong, change the way that you do it, and then grow. Growth is often an awkward process. Now, as Paul is talking to the Ephesian church, they're in a situation where they need to work out how they can grow together. So today he's going to give us a posture of how we can stand when we are in a situation where we know that we have been saved by grace, but now we have to grow together to be like Christ. We are in the book of Ephesians, and Paul is writing to a group of people who are surrounded by a spiritual battle. There are spiritual forces everywhere vying for attention and showing off their might. But Paul is writing them not from a powerful temple or a place of position, but from a prison. His message is that instead of choosing all of these gods, you have the God who has chosen you. He has just laid out for them the truth of the gospel and their place in the world. So whilst it may look like they are losing, they are with God and they have immeasurable blessings planned for them. They have been saved not by their own doing, but by what Jesus has done, to be a people who have the power of God. When they were unworthy, Christ died and was raised. And so then now they can do good works. Now Paul has just told us those truths. And now once he has laid that down, today he'll start fleshing out what that means for the way they live their lives. Last week we saw that Paul was imprisoned so he could tell the mystery of how God has made peace with humans and how he was able to make peace between Jews and Gentiles. And he said how the church is the thing that God likes to show off to the world. God's wisdom in action is the church. Now, given that we have been taken from being shuffling zombies to becoming beloved heirs so that we can do good works, and we are now that thing that God shows off to the world, how do we do that and what do we do now? Well, Paul starts this section by saying, I therefore urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called. So if all this stuff is true, how then do we walk? If our value is in Jesus and what he has done, if we have been saved from a purposeless and even harmful existence, if those who are led by duty and those who are led by authenticity can have peace together in Christ, if we are that shining diamond of God's wisdom, his plans for the world, then how do we live in light of that? Now, this is where the rest of the letter is all about. That's what the rest of it's all about. And Paul will start by giving us those deep directions that should shape our behaviour. And he will get into more specifics later on. Today, Paul wants us to know the posture that we should have towards our community and how we can grow together. If the story about us and the universe is the foundations, all the stuff that Paul has taught us so far are the foundations for us as a church, then this next bit is kind of the framework for the building, the walls and the beams from which the rest is built upon. Primarily, the walls and beams that he wants to build the church on is unity, unity with each other. So he lays out how that will happen. So now that peace is possible, we will be united. Now, unity is a trickier concept than people generally think. It's a concept that is dear to us as Churches of Christ because we are a unity movement. Churches of Christ was started by people in the United States who saw that the church kept splitting off into all these different denominations and sub-denominations and movements over small, tiny theological differences. You are this type of Calvinist, I'm this type of Calvinist, we cannot have communion or work together at all. And so the leaders of the Church of Christ movement tried to put an end to this and be unified by splitting off into a different denomination. Now, initially, it wasn't that simple or ironic, but that is sort of what it became like. Now, I took recently a Churches of Christ identity and distinctives course, and in that we had a bunch of Church of Christ pastors and other people associated with Churches of Christ, and we were all talking about how good and essential church unity is and how we all need to be unified as a church, as a larger church, and all those things are very nice, and we all agreed that it was good that the church should be unified. There was no one amongst us that was in favour of disunity. Everyone was in favour of unity, so the problem should be easy and solved. However, we also never mentioned anything that we might possibly disagree on. We managed to stay unified because we were all too polite to bring up anything that might have been the differences between us. Now, as good Australians, I suspect that you all know how to do the same. Polite company does not bring up topics that would cause embarrassment or fights. It's rude to talk about religion, politics, sex, and money. Now, this tactic is not always avoidable. So when it does come up in a debate or something, you'll often hear someone say, "Well, we all need to be united. So you need to agree with me, and if you disagree, you're the one who is causing disunity." Now, the thing that people who are calling for unity and yet wanting to kick out someone who disagrees with them, the thing that they miss is that unity as a concept is not strong enough in itself. You need something to unite around. And so uniting around unity is a fairly fragile value. The disunity happens when you're really uniting around different things and you don't always say what they are. So when it comes to politics, we're told that we should be united around being Australians. We want to be a united Australia. So they usually say, "Well, to be a united Australia, you need to unite around the policy that my party is putting forth. If you don't, then you're the one who is dividing Australia." However, we all know that being united around Australia does not mean that we need to accept that policy or not accept it. When it comes to differences, there are two main problems. First is, what is it that we're going to accept? And the second is, what is it that we're going to not accept? Proper unity will inevitably have both. Uniting around something will inevitably exclude anyone who does not hold to that thing. Even having a united Australia inevitably excludes anyone who is not Australian. But we need to be clear on what we are accepting and what we do not exclude. Who is acceptable and what is not acceptable? So if we suddenly said that you are not a real Australian unless you've watched the movie The Castle, or if you don't know who Donald Bradman is, then you're not a real Australian. Or if you don't agree on our party's policy position, then you're not a real Australian. Then we're not really united around being Australians, but around those other things, a shared culture or a political persuasion. So what makes up our unity? How do we accept? And what is our limiting measure for acceptance? Well, Paul says we are called, we are all called, and so as our accepting posture, we, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. This should be our posture towards people. Our boast is gone because we were saved by grace, not by works. We are all undeserving, and so the usual things that we would use to exclude someone from our group do not apply. This means that there is still tensions as one person holds a different view or is at a different stage in their Christian training montage than another. And so we need to be accepting in humility, gentleness, and bear with one another in love, eager to maintain unity and peace. So Jesus is all about accepting. So we then, I guess, we should just love and accept everybody. Except if you do that, then you are united around love and acceptance, not around Jesus. And so Paul says, there is one body and one Spirit. Just as you were called to one hope that belongs to your call, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. So whilst we approach each other with love and humility, there is only one faith, one God, one baptism, one Spirit. The thing we are united around is God. Now we have another problem. When I came to Christ, I don't know about you, but I was perfect. And so there was nothing left for me to do in my Christian training montage except to judge how you have come to Christ and to make sure that you do all the right things. Now in our church, I know we also have Roland, who is also perfect. But Roland and I may also sometimes disagree on things. And so if Roland is perfect and I am perfect and we disagree on things, then how will this crazy little thing called church function? So we should now walk with a posture of love and acceptance, united around God. But how will we know if I am right or if Roland is right? More realistically, how can Roland and I grow to do the things that God says he has prepared for us to do? Well, Paul says that in God's grace, he has given us a gift, the gift of apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers to equip us. So as a unified body, God has given us people to teach us so we can grow in our unity of faith and knowledge of Jesus, so we can grow as a body and in Christ. Even though Roland and I disagree, we may learn and grow together. We will bear with each other in love. Now this takes us back to it being by grace that we have been saved. Normally you prove your maturity or your skill and then you are admitted into a group. To be a doctor and to be considered to be a doctor, you need to have a degree, you need to do the appropriate traineeships, you need to pass the appropriate tests and exams and things, and then you are able to call yourself a doctor. If you're a Christian, you just need to accept what Jesus has done, which is great. But now that we are in the group, how do we do good works or walk in a manner that's worthy of our calling? Well, God has given us other Christians to help us grow, apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. Now, I think sometimes there is a danger when we read this verse. Some people read it and they think that in the church there's these special people who have some special separate spiritual powers, and they may have the power of the apostle or the power of the evangelist or the power of the shepherd or the power of the teacher. And so we need to find these people and we just let them do their role, and everyone else in the church can say, well, My role in the church is actually as the churchgoer. And so I come on Sunday, I give my tithes and offerings, I worship, and then I leave. But it's these special gifted Christians that they can do all the other stuff. Now, that's probably somewhat true to a degree in that some people have extra gifting in some of these roles. But if you look at the next verse, you can see that the reason that these people have these roles is twofold. They equip the saints for the work of ministry, and they build up the body of Christ. So they equip the saints so that they can do the same work that they are doing. The role of these people is to pass on the gifts so that others can do them also. You do not have to say, this person is an evangelist and I'm not an evangelist, so I cannot talk to people about God, but this person can. God gave us evangelists so that they can teach evangelism to the saints, so that we can use evangelism to build up the body. That is to say, God has given the church people to help them go from an accepted person as a shuffling zombie to be worthy of the shimmering diamond that God shows off to the angels. We are in a state of growth. Now, this is important for unity because it means that we are all works in progress. I was watching my children do some colouring the other day. Felix was colouring in a picture of Optimus Prime, the Transformer, who's also a truck. And I looked upon what he was doing and I thought, wow, what an incredible work of art. Now, the picture is not particularly remarkable. He put some cool lava on the volcano in the background and some lava coming out the top. But the lava that comes out the top, it just kind of becomes very square as it gets to the edge of the page. He doesn't colour completely in the lines, although he's mostly there. They're all blocks of singular colour. There's not shading or lighting effects or anything like that. But I remember when his version of colouring in was a few scribbled black circles in the middle of the picture. Now he's keeping in the lines. He's thinking about colour. He's even thinking of the story that it's telling. Me seeing his growth made me look at this and say, this is an amazing work of art. We were chosen when we were not deserving. And now God is growing us into the likeness of his beloved Son. That means that we will start out rather rough. It means that we need to be accepting and humble and loving. It also means that we need to be reminded and taught about what it is that we are united around. So we need people who are apostles, evangelists, prophets, shepherds, and teachers, so we can have a firm knowledge of who God is, what our faith is, and what God has called us to. Once we have that, then we will be able to stand firm when other ideas come our way. We'll be able to know what is not acceptable. Then we're not battered about by the waves of different ideas that appear on our For You page online, or what people push on TV or in the articles that we read in the newspaper. We can be people grown up and united in the one God and governed by the truth. The Ephesians were in a world of forever floating around trends and ideas, and we are the same. I've shown over the last few weeks how our culture has started to idolize and idealize youth and coolness and authentic self-expression. One of the side effects of this, and with growing technology, is that we've learned to value the new over the old. We think new ideas are better than old ones. Now, I am with the book of Ecclesiastes when it says that there is nothing new under the sun. But that book was written over 2,500 years ago, so it is old and out of date. I want to hear what the latest pop psychologist or the latest TED Talk or the latest self-help book says. Now, as I was working through this stuff, I was talking with someone about being grounded in what we know. And the person told me about Brené Brown, who's a a good author and psychologist. And she has a description of this. And she says that we should have a hard back and a soft stomach. A hard back means that those things that we believe and hold firm to are strong. So then we can be vulnerable when we encounter and talk to people, because we know our back is firm, our foundation is strong. The thing that holds our value and our truth is strong, so we can afford to be vulnerable and open with people. Now, if my back is not firm and you say something that contradicts my point of view or is hurtful to me, that will mean that I will want to be hard or cold or mean towards you, because that will defend my value or my sense of worth. If I know my value and truth is strongly rooted in Jesus and what he thinks about me, then that means that it doesn't matter that we don't agree on everything, or if you do or do not say something hurtful to me. It will not make me fall down if you think that we should go left and I think that we should go right. So I can accept your criticism in love. Now, as I was told this by someone, I thought about the passage that I was working on, and it seems that the Apostle Paul, despite the deficiency of being very old, is describing the same thing in Ephesians. He says that we need to speak truth in love. We are strong and unwavering in the truth, so we can be vulnerable to love. It is through that that we can grow in love. So this is how we walk in a manner worthy of our calling. We are united around God. We have a posture of humility and love with each other. And we are built up to be builders with each other, so we can be firm in the truth and loving in our encounters with each other. Now, I think unity is something that this congregation has gotten quite good at. Holding to the truth in love, uniting around God and walking in humility, gentleness, and bearing with one another in love is something that I often see you guys do in amazing ways.